This is Module 9, Part 2. Okay, I guess we'd better make a start. I don't know if we'll fill the full lecture time today, because we don't have too much more to discuss, I think. But anyway, let's see what we can
then
do.
Then I get to go on to
so
10.
Last
That's
week...
Okay.
Oh, cool, okay. So then, last week we covered quite a lot of ground, and I believe last week was Module 9, Part 1. This is Module 9, Part 2. And we're going to start with continuing our discussion about security policies. And I think where we finished last week was data backups. We should include data backups in the security policy, which means that there should be a section in the policy that specifically deals with the frequency of the backup, the storage of the backups, you know, where they should be stored, and the security of the backups.
I don't hear David anymore.
I think he's gone. I'm going to go to the server.
On the bright side, it dropped you off at the end of a sentence. It did.
Anyone remember where we left off?
Backups in the security policy, so that the recording gets the answer for that.
Okay, so it's very important to back up your data. This is a security issue, and it is very important because if somebody steals your data, at least you'll have a backup copy. Or if there is some kind of vandalism, you'll want to have a copy. In a company, it's important to have an off-site backup as well. That is a backup that is not actually at your physical location, just in case, like, there's a fire and your entire office burns down. At least you'll still have those trade secrets. Okay, so the three considerations you need for backups is frequency, time needed to restore the data, how long is it going to take you to get back up online, and storage of the backups. Make sure you store a set in a secure location on your premises, and then make sure that you actually store the backups, as I said, on an off-site location. Also, you might want to password protect your backups. Well, actually, you totally should if you are a company, because if you don't, they're in plain view of everyone, and anyone can get at your information. Okay, we have smart cards, which is another bit of physical security. Smart cards are cards that store information and will usually allow you to get into a building or certain parts of the building. NASA actually uses these. When I was doing my internship at NASA, we had a smart card that let us into our bits of the building and nowhere else. And they're really nice because if somebody leaves, all you have to do is shred the key or deny access to the key. You can change the information on that card without actually having the card in your possession. So it's not like you have to go cut new keys if the person runs off in a blinding rage and won't give their keys back. Does anyone want to tell me what biometric security means? Nobody knows?
We did talk about it last week, didn't we?
It uses, am I able to answer?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's...
Yeah, fingerprint, absolutely. It's going to use physical characteristics, that's basically what it's going to do. It's going to check your physical characteristics. Have we already talked about these? Because if we have, I can move on.
Yeah, I think we did.
Oh.
Yeah, we talked about fingerprint scanners and eye scanners, and we talked about lacks of retinas, and what if I don't have a retina, and what if I don't have a finger, and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we did talk about those. And then we talked about Mythbusters and fooling fingerprint scanners and all that good stuff.
Did we talk
about
Another
there have been attempts to do voice recognition. I think Bell Canada used to do My Voice is My Password, and it was supposed to try and find you that way or something.
Okay.
We also did it on Sneakers.
Has anyone...
On what?
Have we talked about...
It's a movie, Sneakers. You know where the guy comes in...
No.
You haven't watched Sneakers? Okay, all right.
No, I
haven't. Have we talked about file system security? Yeah, I haven't seen it. I really won't.
I've got it DVS. It's okay. We can watch it. No, we haven't. I don't believe.
No,
okay,
we haven't.
And Ali was having a conversation about this on Twitter that I noticed. And was hyping up the the IT Essentials course. But
yeah, he hyped up our course for school. He didn't have to, but it was
shiny new ITE 1 course.
Except you actually gave the poor person the wrong information, but that's okay, because we will set you straight.
Yeah, now. But I got the right information later.
Yes,
so at
of
least
course you did.
I knew.
No drama. But All right, so all file systems can... a file system is basically going to keep track of what's in it, but only... the file system needs a journal to keep track of access to resources by date and time and what's going on with the resources. So it's basically, you can think about it as you managing your money. You know you have money, you know you have this much money, but you can't remember how you spent it or when you put more in. So you got a shiny new debit card from your bank. And every time you do make a transaction, it's going to show up online. And the bank is going to give you a journal of the money you actually spent. That is the difference between FAT32 and NTFS file systems. The NTFS
file... That's a wonderful analogy.
Oh, thank you. I thought it up about 10 seconds ago. So your FAT32 is the file system that's you, the poor college student that doesn't really know how to manage money. NTFS is your debit card. It has a journal, and it is going to keep track for you when things are accessed. It's also going to be able to secure your money better than the college student that has the wads of cash in your wallet, because it can allow you to set file system level permissions on your files, whereas your FAT32 cannot. So when you, if you have XP and you're on a FAT32 and you're thinking, oh, I want this shiny new NTFS file system, no worries. You can use the convert command to get it. You might want to back up your data first. It's supposed to be non-destructive. I've never seen it destroy anything. But when you're going to do something like change an entire partition, you need to back up.
The computer crashed in the middle of the convert process, and that was every byte of data off the machine unretrievable. Oops. Without hours and hours of work. No. So if you're doing it and the power goes out halfway through a convert, bye-bye contents of that hard drive. That's why they tell you to back up. Because if you're halfway through and half of it's FAT and half of it's NTFS, well, you're done.
Do remember, if you decide to make the leap, you cannot leap back. There is no way back except for reformatting. So really think about it.
There is actually, but it's not a Microsoft product. Partition Magic will take you back.
Yeah, it can, but that's lots of money. Yeah, no, it's not easy. It's not just flicking a command and saying convert. It just goes. You have to actually...
You can't just run that command over and over based on what you want.
No, you do it once and that's it. To NTFS. If it's FAT32, you can't translate... Or if it's NTFS, you cannot go back to FAT32. Scrolling, sorry. I don't have my Braille display up right now, so I'm doing it off the computer. Okay, so did we talk about wireless security? I think David's going to come back. I just saw him come online. So I'll just wait a minute. If he doesn't come back, I'll keep going. No. I can scroll through pretty well. I've given this lecture about 4 times. So if I can't deliver it by just kind of having a quick scroll through the notes, I don't know what's wrong with... Doesn't look like he's coming. Okay, so have we spoken about wireless security yet?
No.
Okay.
Oh, just one point here, and it will only matter to the tech heads among us. NTFS does not journal data. It only journals file names, access times, and stuff. So the journal isn't going to save your data.
Okay. So, when we set up our wireless router... Oh, here he comes. David.
Okay, I'm back.
That's okay. I've given your lecture up to the point of wireless security. So you can start there.
Oh, thank you. Where did I drop out?
You dropped
did
out
Did I talk
at
about
hard drives.
SSIDs and...
No. You did backup. Okay. You did backup, and then you said, it's very important how we store your backups. Clunk. And you were gone. And then we picked up there, and Grace continued on.
Yeah.
And we talked about NTFS, and we talked about journals and stuff. And now we're ready to talk about wireless security. Maybe.
Oh, great. Okay, well, thank you
very
much.
Were you talking
that
whole time?
Sorry, I was, actually. I thought everyone was a bit quiet, and now I know why.
Yeah, because Ventrilo can sort of stick around for about a minute or a minute and a half to actually to actually tell you that you've been disconnected. So I wonder if that's what's happening. Is there anything on the Mac that will... Oh, no, you're on Windows. Yeah, it can take a long time to drop out.
At the moment, I'm on Windows, yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what happened was it didn't actually tell me I dropped out, so I just disconnected and reconnected. So, you know, that seems to have solved it, at least for now.
Okay.
Okay.
Yell
anyway,
at us every now and then and ask
on.
Us if we're here.
I did. There was no reply. Oh, dear. Anyway, wireless security techniques. Okay. A few techniques are mentioned here in the module 9 notes. And the first technique to make your Wi-Fi more secure is to disable the broadcast of the service set identifier, or SSID. And the SSID is the name of the wireless network. It's what we use when we want to connect to a Wi-Fi network. Let's say we're in Starbucks or in the local library or something. You can search for wireless networks, and when you see the name of a network you want to connect to, you can connect to that. But if it doesn't broadcast its name, then and before you can connect to it, you need to know the network's name first. So maybe if you have a Wi-Fi network called Secret, and then you disable the broadcast of its SSID, you can only connect to it if you know its name, or if you know that it's called Secret, you can connect to it. If not, then it's more difficult. Okay, and the next one I have, the next topic in the notes here is use MAC address filtering. And MAC address filtering is where you can prevent computers with, or you can prevent, network interface cards with a certain MAC address from connecting to your Wi-Fi network. So, for example, your Wi-Fi card and your Ethernet card and your Bluetooth card all have a MAC address, and you can actually make it so that only computers or only known computers can connect to your wireless network. So if a computer with a MAC address that is not in the list tries to connect, the wireless network will stop that computer from connecting. Is everyone still hearing me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Anyone have any questions so far or any comments?
Fair enough.
I guess no.
Yep. You're doing just
okay,
fine.
Cool.
I was just going to say, though, the only thing I was going to say about the wireless stuff, and I don't want to go into this too much, is that if you hide your SSID, it is an excellent security thing to do, but if you are using your wireless network, it's possible with somebody with a sniffer to find your wireless network and find its name. And that's just something to be aware of. So if you hide the SSID and don't use your wireless network, it's completely invisible. But if you do use it, then it can be picked up.
Okay, that's good to know. Yep. Okay, the next topic we have is wireless encryption and authentication technologies. Okay, and the wire equivalent privacy, or WEP, is I guess that was the first or the initial kind of the initial encryption standard for Wi-Fi networks, WEP, wired equivalent privacy, and this used encryption keys to encode messages, and these keys could actually be detected by monitoring programs, and so therefore you could easily decrypt messages if you obtain the keys. And in the early days anyway, the WEP key length was actually quite short. I think it was like 40
40 bits length, 64 bit keys, 104 bits long, 128 bit keys.
So yeah, I mean, 40-bit keys are would be relatively easy to break with enough processing power and enough. And if you can sniff or obtain enough Wi-Fi traffic, enough messages being broadcast around the network, then it would be relatively easy to decrypt a key of that length. You can actually download software from the internet that will do it for you.
To give you some perspective, guys, that is smaller than your MAC address.
Yeah,
I believe there's an article on the Register that talks about web cracking, and it's called Gone in 60 Seconds. That is how long it takes you to get the keys to any web network.
Wow.
And another point is, here in Malaysia, where I live, WEP is the standard form of Wi-Fi security that you get on most ADSL modems. It does have, there is WPA as well, but if you get the when the company comes to install the ADSL modem for you, if you tell them you want security, they give you WEP by default. And
that's strange.
So the first thing I did when I came over here was, you know, change it to WPA2, I think.
I know somebody who, when they go for holidays in Malaysia, they actually have a wireless card and a dish antenna. And basically, you just point the dish out your motel window and you've got internet access. We do not condone that behavior.
Oh, yeah. Wi-Fi is very common over here, actually. You know, it's quite a wired country. Most coffee shops have Wi-Fi. Most libraries have it. Government offices have it. And here in Penang, which is where I'm based, we have Penang free Wi-Fi, which is available all over the island. It's not very good. It's very slow, but it is there. Okay, that's so moving on from, yeah, it is. It is quite nice, but as I say, you know, it is very slow, and it's totally open, not very secure. You can sit. Not that I would in any way encourage people to do this, but you could sit in a coffee shop with something like Fire Sheep running away merrily on your computer, and you can obtain all kinds of interesting information. Not that I would ever do that or ever encourage anyone else to do that. Okay, am I still? Is everyone still hearing me?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Cool. So Wi-Fi protected access. WPA. This is another encryption standard. It's an improvement over WEP. It uses much stronger encryption than WEP. And then we have Wi-Fi Protected Access 2, which is WPA2. This again is an improved version of WPA, and it was released to introduce a higher level of security than WPA. And WPA2 supports strong encryption. It says in the Module 9 notes here that it's government-grade security. I suppose so. It depends on the government, I suppose. Anyway, there are two versions of WPA2. There's personal, which is password authentication. And there's enterprise, which is server authentication. And most... The version of WPA2 that you get with most commercial or most consumer routers would be personal. To be honest, I'm not sure. Does anyone can anyone comment on that?
Sorry, what was the question? We've got Sue and Grace talking in the background here.
Difference between TKIP and A's and personal and server and...
Okay, TKIP and A's...
Oh, they would be encryption.
Yeah. They are encryption standards, yeah. So basically what you've got, and I don't really want to go into this, is PSK is a pre-shared key, which means that you put in a password on all your devices and it goes. And then your... then you've got two types of encryption. You've got your home and your enterprise grade, depending on how strong your system is. And then you've also got what we call shared authentication, like a RADIUS server or whatever. So look it up on Wikipedia. Basically, you've got home security where everyone puts in a password, and then you've got authentication grade stuff for enterprises where you plug it in and it all authenticates with a central server. I don't want to go into too much more than that in an ITE lecture.
Okay, I've noticed TKIP works well for me and other things I've set up.
The choice between TKIP and A's is whether your device is supported or not. A lot of routers you can just set to automatic and it will do either. So that makes everybody happy.
Ah, I should see if Tomato has that.
So, yeah, so the devices, you know, these are different, what we'd say, different encryption algorithms. And yeah, generally on my router anyway, you can choose. I think there's A's. I think there's A's 2, which is a double round of A's, and then there are various others. If anyone uses TrueCrypt, has anyone ever used TrueCrypt? If you have, you can choose from a very wide range of encryption algorithms. You can even use two or three at the same time, or you can have you can first encrypt using A's, for example, and then you can encrypt again using something else. And yeah, I mean, TrueCrypt is kind of fun if anyone has ever played with that.
Can I just point out very quickly before you do play with TrueCrypt, and I say this to everybody every year, if you forget your password or lose your key files, there is no hope for you getting your data back. Ever. Well, not until at least the projected end of the universe by about 3.
So I can't look up like how to hack TrueCrypt volume and then get some Yahoo Answers page where someone tells me how to open
it's
up
military
a
grade,
TrueCrypt.
It's military
it
grade. It is. It
wow.
is the best encryption that we have in the civilian world. We don't know of anything better. You're looking at people like Peter Gutman, Philip Zimmerman. They're the people who did like PGP and stuff. So this is, if you're going to put all your eggs in your in the one basket, this is a basket made of titanium with 27 locks on it. You're not getting in if you don't know your key files or your passwords. And I'd encourage people to have a look at TrueCrypt. It's
yeah,
certainly an interesting utility.
I have a friend in a certain country where the government is very interested in knowing what its citizens do on the internet, and he uses TrueCrypt, and apparently he's very happy with it. Okay, so moving on, there's another Wi-Fi security standard that we haven't looked at yet, which is called Lightweight Extensible Authentication Protocol, or LEAP, L-E-A-P. It's also called EAP Cisco, and actually it was created by Cisco to address weaknesses in WPA, and in WEP and WPA, and it's a good choice if you're using Cisco equipment with Windows or Linux clients or servers.
You'll see it a lot on exams because they created it, so it'll come up probably.
It does.
Okay. Next we have. Yeah, sorry, Gary.
I was just going to say I've just typed the word TrueCrypt into chat so that anybody who wants to look at it doesn't have an E in it, just in case you're Googling for it.
Thanks. Next, we have Wireless Transport Layer Security, which is WTLS. I'm sure many people have heard of this. It's used in mobile devices with wireless applications, with the Wireless Applications Protocol, WPA. And mobile devices am I still...
yes, you are.
Is everyone still hearing me?
Yeah.
Good. I get paranoid because the Ventrilo just pinged at me. So anyway, wireless transport layer security. It's used on mobile devices that don't have much spare bandwidth to devote to security protocols. And WTLS provides security for WAP. Devices in bandwidth-efficient manners. And as far as I know, if anyone has been to Japan, you can actually, they have a kind of a subset of the internet that's reserved for mobile phones over there called iMode, and I think iMode uses WTLS, or at least it did the last time I was there. Okay, wireless security techniques continued. This is a long list of things you can do to make your wireless networks more secure, according to the Module 9 notes. The first one is modify the default SSID. We've covered that already. Set up a separate WLAN, SSID VLAN. That's what it says here. So set up a separate WLAN and, to be honest with you, And I would like to, if anyone can add some information about actually how to do this or why it would make the system more secure, I'd be very happy to have it, because I can't really talk too intelligently about this particular topic. So if Kerry or Grace might know anything else about it, please feel free to, you know, to butt in.
This is changing the MAC address or changing MAC address security or changing the SSID.
It says that's okay. It says here in one of the part of the notes for Module 9, it says set up a separate WLAN, and then in parentheses SSID/VLAN. So, to be honest with you, I'm not too about that. So yeah.
Can on some routers.
Yeah, no, the trick is here, and this is really covered better in the networking courses, but what they're saying is set up your wireless network separately and grant access to the rest of your network on what the actual users need. So when you jump on the wireless, a VLAN is a virtual local area network, keep the network separate and only allow access to things that actually need access, because a lot of people just have their wireless giving access to everything on the network. So, for example, you may not want your Xbox to be able to access your file servers, but you do want your Xbox to be able to access the internet, and that's what they're talking about. It's good practice, but I haven't seen too many people do it.
Thank you, Kerry. Appreciate that. Yeah. The next one we've actually discussed already, use strong encryption. Obviously, the stronger encryption, the harder it is to crack. But if you use keys with an extremely long key length, then actually this could slow down your network as well, because it takes a lot of processing power and on your router and on your computers to decrypt messages using very, very long keys. So you've got a kind of a you have to make a choice in some ways between the key length and the speed of your network and what it is that you're trying to protect. I found 128-bit keys to be pretty good. Some people use 256-bit keys. I don't know. I mean, there are 512 and 1024-bit keys as well. Again, it depends what you're trying to protect. If you have a very, very sensitive information flying over your Wi-Fi, then you might want to look at longer key lengths or keys of a longer length. The next one here is deploy mutual authentication between client and network, which means the client has to authenticate to the network and the network has to authenticate to the client. Now, again, I haven't really seen any of these in a in a consumer setup, on a personal network. I think some companies would have it. I know, for example, our organization here in Penang does not. Okay, so it would be good practice if you can do it, I think. The next one, use VPNs or WEP with MAC address filters to secure business-specific devices that don't support WPA or WPA2. Okay, so if you have a very old router, for example, or an old operating system that doesn't support WPA or WPA2, then you could use WEP with MAC address filtering to secure your network and prevent unauthorized machines from logging on. The next one is deploy a lightweight access point architecture, I should say, that doesn't secure security information locally. And by locally, I assume they mean on clients, on the client system. Because when you log on to a wireless network using Windows or the Macintosh, or I suspect Linux as well, the username, the SSID, and the password will be stored locally on your computer. And that is a potential security risk. If someone breaks into your computer somehow or gains access to it, they could connect to the wireless networks that you use. So if you don't secure the security information locally on your system, then your network could be more secure. Okay, is everyone still, am I still broadcasting?
Yep.
Yep.
Good. Okay. The next one is ensure management ports are secured. Okay, so those would be the ports that you use to connect to your routers and network devices to administer them. So ensure that they are secured. Also, physically hide or secure access points to prevent tampering. Okay, so that would be, you know, make sure that your routers are not easily accessible. If you leave them out on a table, then pretty much anyone can plug in a wire and connect to them. If you put them high up on the wall, then you need a ladder to access them, but if anything goes wrong, you need a ladder to access them. This is something we discovered recently. We have a wireless point high up on a wall in our office. It crashed. We needed a very long ladder so that I could go up there and reset it. So it's secure, but occasionally troublesome. So again, with security, there's often a trade-off between convenience and security. And you have to decide which is more important to you and do, you know, kind of a balancing act. Okay, the next topic is how to update the signature files and antivirus and anti-spyware software. This is a new topic. So we're leaving wireless networking or wireless network security behind. This is actually quite a short one. Use the update feature in your software or download the latest signature files from the vendor's website. But an important point to remember here is make sure it is actually the vendor's website and that you aren't being spoofed. Okay, so make sure you are downloading these from the vendor's real website, or you could potentially be downloading a virus or a Trojan instead of the signature files that you're hoping to get. And when updating, it suggests here that first you should set a Windows restore point, which seems sensible to me. Next, open your antivirus or anti-spyware software. Next, locate the update control button or update menu item or whatever and select it. Okay, and after the program is updated, use it to scan your computer, which means when you've finished updating to the latest virus signatures, scan your computer to make sure that you don't have any malware or viruses hiding on there. When the scan is completed, check the report for viruses or other problems that could not be fixed or treated, and try to sort them out yourself. Try to delete them or, you know, follow the recommendations yourself. And the next one is set the antivirus or anti-spyware program to automatically update and to run on a scheduled basis. So it's always best if you're going to leave your computer on for a long time to make sure that your antivirus program will update regularly. Many people choose to do this in the middle of the night. Personally, I don't leave my computer on all the time, so I often do a manual check for updates a couple of times a week. But anyway, that is something you can do. Okay, the next topic here. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say or any questions, any comments?
Everybody understanding everything okay?
Yeah, that is something to look at, actually. If you have a computer like a laptop that you don't always have on all the time, making sure that, because, you know, a lot of times your antivirus program schedule will assume that you are a person who leaves your computer on 24/7, so that's a good thing to keep in mind, like you were saying.
Does anybody find that AVG's updating schedule drives them batty? As soon as you fire up the netbook, AVG updates, and then it reboots, and then it updates, and then it reboots, and then it updates again, and then it wants to reboot. It can be quite disruptive. Important that you keep it up to date, but quite frustrating. Which is why you should turn your netbook on once every week or so, at least, so that you do keep these things up to date. Sorry, Grace?
Before I go on, like, a trip or go to a place where I think I'm going to use my computer a lot, I'll turn it on at home the day before, charge it, and make sure my Dropbox is synced and that my updates are all done so that I can use it if that works.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, let's move on. The next topic is how to install operating system service packs and security patches. Again, I think, you know, most people will be quite familiar with this, I imagine, but anyway, Let's go through it. The first step one would be create a system restore point or a Windows restore point before installing updates. This could be important actually, because if the update has some kind of bad effect or breaks something, then you can just drop back or roll back to
I've had experience
the
with
restore
that.
Point that you
yeah.
created. Yeah. Yeah, that would be I do that myself. I think that's pretty important to do.
Didn't create a
even before installing
point,
antivirus.
My computer ended up restarting over and over. It was in an infinite loop.
Oh, that's nice. How did you fix that? Just out of curiosity.
Well, we called HP and they had us, I think, go into like the BIOS or something and type something in, and that fixed it. It was like a really long string of code.
Nice.
I was surprised, because those kinds of effects are generally seen as the kinds of things you just can't recover from.
Unless you're HP, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. The next step would be a check for updates to ensure that you have the latest ones. Okay, the next step would be download the updates using, what can I say, using automatic updates probably, or from the operating system. You can do it manually as well. Or from the manufacturer's website. So it depends. If you're updating Windows, these days Windows is pretty good about downloading hardware updates for you, but there may be occasions when you have to download updates directly from the manufacturer's website. And if that's the case, then again, it might be a good idea to check or to make sure that you are really on the manufacturer's website and that you're not on a spoofed version of it. The next section is install the updates. Yay! Okay, and then the next one, reboot the computer if necessary, and it almost always is. The next one, ensure the computer is operating properly. Good. Well, hopefully it does. If it doesn't, then call your vendor if possible and get them to give you a very long code that you can type into your BIOS. Okay, the next one. Actually, this isn't exactly about information security as such. It's the section is troubleshooting. And I know that earlier in the course we did look at troubleshooting quite extensively, but I'll just go over this again just as a review, I suppose. So the troubleshooting process, and this would be the same for troubleshooting an operating system problem or maybe a security issue with your operating system or whatever. So number one, first step is identify the problem, which is sometimes easier said than done. The next step, establish a theory of probable causes. Okay, am I still, is everyone still hearing
yeah,
me?
Yeah, you're here. Someone just joined.
It's Marlene just joined.
Great, okay.
I'd say we have one student that misses daylight savings. One, there is always
nope,
one.
No, we've got two.
Oh, we've got two, okay.
I think she'll be showing up right about 10 o'clock.
Okay.
There we go,
hello,
good
Marlene.
Morning.
Good morning.
Daylight savings got
daylight
you. Yeah, we started an hour ago.
Oh, I forgot about the time.
It's okay.
Sorry. I did email, but I wasn't sure who'd see it.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Well, don't worry,
no
it's
harm
recorded.
Done. Just pick the recording up and listen to the first hour. We're just sort of having a smile at you. We're saying there's one student that always does the daylight savings thing.
But you're not
thing,
the only one.
But you're not the only
Melissa
one.
Melissa should be showing up in about 5 minutes.
Oh, that's fine.
Well,
sorry, back to you, David.
Okay. Sorry, shall we? I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll just whip through these last few notes, and then we can discuss something
else,
I guess. Okay, so I guess we've got the troubleshooting process. I've already looked at number one, identify the problem, which again can be tricky. But anyway, number two, establish a theory of probable causes. Number three, determine the exact cause. This again can be a little tricky. Number four, implement a solution. Number five, verify the solution and full system functionality. And number six, document your findings. Now, I mean, I think, at least for me, one of the most crucial steps in that whole series of instructions would be the final one, document your findings. We have a situation where we have quite a lot of fairly old computers and things go wrong with them fairly often. And if we didn't keep a logbook for each computer, it might be difficult to solve some of the problems that frequently pop up. So I find that a good system logbook is actually an invaluable tool in troubleshooting, at least for me. Okay, review the troubleshooting process.
Another point I was going to make, and this is one of our explorations students that came up with this one. I was just going to say one of the exploration students said, and I'd never thought about doing this, is if you get something like PM Wiki, you can actually set up your own wiki on your own computer, and there are versions on how to do it with Windows and how to do it with Linux, and then you feed all of your information into your own little wiki and keep it backed up, and then that way you have all of the information that you need, and it's kind of a nifty idea. PMWiki.org. I had never thought of doing that.
That is a good idea, because at the moment our logbooks are, well, I mean, we keep it in an Excel spreadsheet at the moment, but an Excel spreadsheet for each computer. So that would be something to look at.
Yeah, PMWiki is free and written in PHP and runs on anything and doesn't use any database, so no complexity there, and handles like 300,000, pages without a problem. But, yeah, anyway, sorry, go on with the rest of your stuff. I was just adding that in.
No, that's great. It's good to have extra information. Okay, so review the troubleshooting process. We'll take a quick look at that. Step one, identify the problem, and it says here use open-ended questions and use close-ended questions, or closed questions we might say, to try and elicit information from the user about what might be wrong with the computer. Step two would be establish a theory of probable causes. For example, what has caused the problem? Is it a virus? Is it a Trojan? Is it a worm? Is it spyware? Is it adware? Is it grayware or malware? Is it caused by a phishing scheme, for example? Unprotected equipment rooms, unsecured work environment, for example. All of these would be this would be the troubleshooting steps as regards security issues. So, what might be the probable cause of the problem? Okay, the next step would be determine an exact cause. So the first step here, it says here, disconnect from the network, which I think is a good idea if you think you might have a security problem, like a virus attack or something. First disconnect from the network and then run your troubleshooting, then do the rest of your troubleshooting. Update the antivirus and spyware signatures. Yeah, okay, you can do that unless your computer's been compromised by a virus already. Scan the computer with protection software. Check the computer or network device. Log in as a different user to change your password. What else do we have? Secure all equipment rooms. Make sure that your equipment rooms have locks. Make sure maybe that your server is in a lockable server rack. Secure your work environment. Enforce your security policy. All of these are things you can do. The next step, implement a solution. Okay, so it says here, help desk repair logs, as we mentioned earlier. Other technicians, you can consult the repair logs for the computer. You can ask other technicians. You can consult the manufacturer's FAQs. You could also consult technical websites. News groups, maybe, computer manuals if you have them, device manuals if you have them, online forums, or you could use Google. Do a quick Google search and see what you can find. The next step, verify the solution. Yeah, sorry, Grace, go ahead.
Oh, no worries. I didn't realize you weren't done. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm almost done. Okay, the next step,
no hurry.
Verify the solution and full system functionality. Rescan the computer to ensure no viruses remain. Rescan the computer to ensure that no spyware or adware or greyware or whatever remains. Check the security software logs to make sure that there are no problems that haven't been fixed. Test the network and internet connections. Make sure that all applications are working properly. Check that access to authorized resources, such as, for example, shared printers and databases, is up and running properly. Make sure that make sure that your entries to your building, for example, is secure. Make sure that people can't just wander in off the street. And make sure that the security policy is being enforced. And the final step, step six, is document your findings. There we go. Okay, so document your findings. Discuss the solution. Discuss the solution with the customer. Have the customer verify that the problem has been solved, and provide the customer with all with all paperwork. Document the steps taken to solve the problem in the work order and in the technician's log or in the technician's journal. Document any components used in the repair. And document the time spent to resolve the problem or issue. And all of this is very important, actually. This step six stuff, in my opinion, is very important. Especially the part about have the customer verify that the problem has been solved. And I would add to this, have the customer sign something so that the customer is officially stating that the problem has been fixed. This is something that I find to be quite important. The last part of the notes here is about identifying common security problems and their solutions. So it just gives a list of some of the most common security problems that you might have.
We don't usually go over.
It also gives the solutions. So this might be a start when you're troubleshooting security issues. Okay, the first problem is the wireless network is compromised, even though one. You don't usually go over this part?
No, we usually stop right here.
Because this is the last... I think this is the last part. No, there's a little more, actually.
Usually we just read over this.
So if
yeah,
you don't normally
the,
cover
the
this,
the giant
then you
table
stop.
Of problems and solutions we usually... Yeah.
Okay, it is pretty useful, I think. That's the one. Yeah, it's not exhaustive, but
we always
it's,
tell people
it's pretty
you
good,
may miss
actually.
Questions if you don't look at this.
You know,
Mike,
it's a good starting
so, yeah, it
point,
is a good stuff.
Okay, well that's all I have actually for module 9. I think we finished a little early, but I'm not sure.
No,
what
no,
we,
we've got lots of stuff to go
do,
through
from this point.
No, no, we've got to go through a whole lot of academy changes and stuff, and we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about a few other things. So, well done, though. You've done
really
a really
good
job. Really good job at lecturing.
Thank you.
Yeah, well delivered.
Miss Melissa, remember daylight savings.
I apologize for all the internet troubles. We've had, we don't have the most stable of connections over here, but, I'm glad we could get through it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to head out if you don't mind. I have to go and do some teaching. So thanks very much.
I'll run your quiz.
Thanks. That'd be great. Thank you very much, Grace. Okay. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good. Enjoy the rest of the lecture.
Goodbye.
No worries. Now, one other quick point, people, and we're not actually having a shot at people directly here. www.qcat.org/time.php. Please, have a look. It's really good.
Don't feel bad if you were late. Everybody, or not everybody, at least one student does it. This time there were two. No worries. Just reminding you. Daylight savings. You now start an hour earlier. And I have a question to raise to people. Because I can do this, and I don't see why I can't. I never thought about it. Would it be a good idea next term to start classes at 10 for the first few weeks? Well, 10 our time, so that it's always 9 o'clock and we don't change. Because I can't go any earlier, but I can go an hour later. What do people think?
My feeling is that people might want to get to bed earlier. I mean, would people want to... Because it's late for some people. 9 to 11 is later than 8 till 10.
Yes, but the problem is when we move forward, people aren't used to the time change and they have really hard time having that hour later. Whereas if I do it that hour later, they'll always have... They won't ever have to adjust.
It's always going to be 9 o'clock for them.
What were you wanting to do, Grace? I'm sorry.
I'm wanting to start always at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Because I can move it back 1 hour, and for next term, not this term, we'll always do it.
Oh, so you're saying do 10 to 12 your time for the first
bit? Yeah, for the first bit, because it's only a few weeks until they go back, and then we'll move back with them.
No, it's 2 months.
No, you guys don't move.
We don't move.
No. When does America shift back? Early March? That's
March. We'll be back in February. It's about 4 weeks.
I'll find out. On my calendar at home, because I have a 2012 calendar that I'm playing with it.
I think people can deal with it.
How do other people feel about the lectures being earlier or later? Yeah, how do you guys feel about the lectures being earlier or later?
I kind of prefer them earlier. I had just, been totally getting things done around the house, and then when my husband says, "Don't you have lecture tonight?" and it was like already a quarter till six, and I was like, oh my god, it started an hour early. Frantically, I was like, oh, boot up the computer, hurry up. I totally did not mean to do that.
It's okay.
I've just found going the other way that when we change times, when it goes an hour later, people drop like flies because they're not used to that having to be up that hour later. So if we started that way, they wouldn't have to make the adjustment in the middle of 2 months into class.
That's true. And it's not like it's dramatically later. It's just 9 o'clock, the way we've done it for the past few months.
I like the switch that we made. I just forgot.
Oh, that's okay.
Do people prefer earlier classes? And I'll be politically incorrect here. Do the older people prefer earlier classes? Because as
it's
get older,
usually
I want
the older people.
I want to go to bed
fall
earlier.
Asleep. I want to go to.
I'm not an older person. Wait, I am now, but no, I like it. I like it early.
Okay, so Lynn likes it late.
Okay, so Lynn likes
it. Late's good with me, but that's because of my schedule right now. It could change at some other time, but I'm one of the oldest people in the class, and
I'm
on Central Time.
I'll probably put it to a vote next term. We'll do it this way now, but I've just found that switching to that hour later kills some of the much older or working people because they're not ready for that switch and it just throws them off.
Right.
Okay. We're going to do the quiz. I'm just going to pull it up. And then we are going to have a talk about some things. I don't think we're going to go into 10 today because I have a few things we need to cover, academy business and stuff that you guys will soon be encountering. So I'll talk about that with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Carrie said something about changes.
Yeah. They're beautiful.
Ooh.
No, you'll still... Well, it's... Let's just say we'll get to it, but essentially...
It's not that big of a deal.
But, the site's gone all social networky and stuff, and it's just like, oh, please. Why?
Oh, so you're just telling us how to deal with all that.
Yeah, I'm just going to give you guys a little talk about the new site and everything. It's really not that big a deal and won't affect you guys very much, but it will affect you next time you log.
And just so if everybody knows, there will be a like button for Facebook on our QCAT page over my dead body.
It's on Cisco.
Yeah, it's allowed to be there, but I'm so sick and tired of like us on Facebook, follow us on Foursquare, be happy with us on LinkedIn, be our friend on Bebo. It's like, maybe I just want to read the website.
Follow us on Twitter.
Oh, I forgot to publicly plus one. Sorry, Sean, I should publicly plus one you on that. Thank you. Plus one. Oh, really?
Bebo.
We have a friend.
Do you still use Bebo?
No.
I've got Bebo.
In some
I've
very,
got Bebo.
Very, very interesting places, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, everything's got a plus one, Sean.
Plus one has become so ubiquitous that a friend of ours actually uses it in conversation when he likes your idea.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, plus one on that. Yeah, sorry. But anyway, so yeah, so we're sort of, you know, be aware that Grace is about to start the quiz, but yeah, there are some significant changes which we'll talk about, and there are some social networky things which are supposed to allow you to connect to the thousands and thousands of students if you've got time to. And I personally don't, so don't expect to see me on there. But that's personal choice.
Sorry, one of the other students is messed up.
You're up for the quiz, Grace, or...?
No, sorry, Corey was writing to me about class, and I was just... that's three that haven't made it because of daylight savings. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. We just laugh. It's not a problem. We're not beating up on you guys. We just have a laugh because somebody always does it.
Yeah, we had a student yesterday that did it. We had two students today who did it. We don't really care. Three. We don't really care. It's just sort of like, well, we've announced it four times and people still came late and it's all good. So you're here and that's all that matters.
Yeah, here's my quiz. All right, we have a chapter 9. What characterizes a DDoS attack? Choose one. Many hosts participate in a coordinated. It takes only a short time to set up. C.
Grace, turn your auto key
on. Oh, yeah, huh?
Yeah.
Because you're sort of... And then you're... And it's quite here to... And, yeah.
Wow, I'm really proud of myself. I actually got through an entire section of lecture without putting myself on push-to-talk and didn't notice. Or taking myself off push-to-talk. That is amazing. Okay, I'll start over.
You sounded okay,
many hosts...
too, when you did.
That's a thing! A. Many hosts participate in a coordinated attack. D. It takes only a short time... B. It takes only a short time to set up. C. Home computers with internet connections are not susceptible. D. It is easy to determine the intent of a packet. Choose now. Well done! The answer is A. Absolutely. Which two threats are physical threats? Choose two. A. Laptops are stored in an unlocked cabinet. Yes. B. Antivirus software has out-of-date definitions. No. Does someone have something to say? Sorry.
No, it was just somebody typing in U circumflex by accident. I blame those Mexican keyboards or something. I don't know.
C. All users use one generic username and password to connect to the network. No. D. The network server and network equipment are kept in the corner of the office for easy access. Yes, absolutely. Alright, and that's that. We've gotten our two. We'll go on. Which security threat installs to a computer and monitors all computers... Which type of security threat installs to a computer without user knowledge and then monitors user activity? A. Adware. B. Grayware. C. Grayware. Or D. Spyware. Choose now.
You just read one of the choices twice.
D. Absolutely, good job, guys.
You just
guys.
Read one of the choices twice, Grace.
Did I?
You read
Grayware
twice.
You read Grayware. Yes, you said it two times.
Oh! Well, sorry. Okay, well, it was spyware anyway. Sorry, guys.
She was just checking that you're all paying attention. Well done, guys. You passed her attention-paying test.
You know what? Sadly, I wasn't paying attention and completely don't remember doing that. Like, seriously.
I was thinking, was there a difference in the way it was spelled, or...
No, it was just... me outputting what I was reading and absolutely not paying any attention to what I was saying. This does happen. Alright. I'm going to change this question up a little bit. You open your email and you get an email from your bank saying that your account has been compromised and you need to click on this link right now and confirm your personal information so that you can get access to your funds. Otherwise, your accounts will be frozen and the IRS is going to take all of your money. What kind of email, what kind of attack is this? Is it badware, phishing, stealth virus, or deworm? B. Absolutely right, guys. You've just gotten your new fancy wireless router. Before you connect it to the internet, you have decided that you want to secure it. Which two of these things are you going to do? A. Change the default administrative password. Yes.
Quiz question. Anybody still got their wireless router with the default password set on it? Actually, you probably shouldn't answer that. I bet
no.
You some of you do.
Install a security appliance to stop all wireless traffic. Yeah, absolutely not. That doesn't make any sense. Enable the broadcasting of the SSID for only one access point. That doesn't make any sense, does it? If we did that, you only have one access point, firstly. And if you enabled SSID for one access point, once they're on, if they get in, they're going to be able to get to every other access point. So
we actually have three.
Yeah, we do. So if you're going to enable or disable the SSID broadcast, you're going to do it all or nothing for security reasons. If you're going to enable or disable SSID broadcast for some other reason, because the beaconing is messing with your FreeTalk wireless headset, that's a different story. You can only have one broadcast if that's what you want to do. But for security, you're going to have all or nothing. D. Use MAC filtering. Absolutely. If you must. Okay, you have just set up a WEP access point in your house, and you live with your family. All of a sudden, your family members are coming up to you and saying that their computers, iPods, and PS2s are no longer connecting to the network. What might be the cause of this? WEP is a strong encryption technique that requires a successful handshake to establish connectivity. B. The access point cannot broadcast SSIDs when WEP is enabled. C. The users have not configured their computers, iPods, PS3s for WEP encryption. Or D. The access point uses 64-bit encryption, which is not supported.
That question should be changed to, you have recently enabled WEP on an access point.
Okay, I just looked to see if I kind of said that wrong, and I didn't. It was a technician has done this, but I'm just making up as I go. Okay, which protocol was designed to provide security for WAP devices and efficiently uses bandwidth? A. SecTLS. B. TCPSec. C. TTL. D. WTCP. E. WTLS. Choose now. Whoever said E, good job.
That was John.
Good job! Okay, so your choices... Okay, this is security for WAP devices and efficient bandwidth. The answer is E, and it's WTLS. Honestly,
comes up in the test.
Yeah, look at those. Leap and WTLS do come up. Leap is our Cisco lightweight
extensible authentication protocol.
Yeah, that one. I can recognize it. in a list of choices, and that's about as far as it goes. WTLS is our WAP security. So those are the two big ones that will throw you. Okay. Your executive at your company has just gotten a new fancy computer. What should you do with his hard drive that didn't contain any sensitive information? It probably contained his scores to a few solitary games, because that's what he does. You're going to put it in the secretary's computer because she needs a new hard drive. What are we going to do? A. Erase the data from the drive. B. Destroy the drive and buy a new drive. C. Reformat and reload an operating system on the drive. D. Backup the data and verify that all patches were installed. For those of you that said C, you're right. We're just going to reformat it, and we are going to install a new operating system. That way, any data that was on it is going to be erased. The secretary is probably not going to bother going and trying to recover that data. Doesn't matter. We're just going to reformat and reinstall. Now, if it were more sensitive data, you might want to destroy it, use data wiping programs, all sorts of things, but it doesn't matter, and it's within the organization itself. Okay, number 9. Why should a security policy contain data classifications? A. To support the highest levels of encryption. B. To protect the individuals and companies from lawsuits. C. To avoid security audits. D. To ensure that employees can perform their job and protect sensitive data. Choose now. D is correct. Good job. Oh, this is another hard one. Which type of security is a specialized chip that is installed on the computer motherboard for hardware and software authentication? A. Device Identity Module, DIM. D. Data Verification Module, DVM. C. Password Security Module, PSM. D. Trusted Platform Module, TPM. Good job! I can never remember that one, guys. Well done, it's D. Which type of traffic is Microsoft Windows Firewall usually configured to normally configured to block? A. All incoming traffic. B. Selected incoming and outgoing TCP/IP traffic. C. Incoming TCP/IP traffic only. D. Outgoing traffic except SPX traffic. Or E. Outgoing TCP/IP traffic only. Choose now. No, it's going to be B. Selected incoming and outgoing TCP/IP traffic. If it blocked all of your incoming TCP/IP traffic only, you wouldn't be able to browse a website. In fact, you wouldn't be able to do much, because you wouldn't be able to download anything. Which method of authentication uses physical characteristics of the user? A. Card keys. B. Password keys. C. Alarm triggers. D. Biometrics. Choose now. D does. Alright. 13. Good job, guys. Which is the definition of WPA? A. Wi-Fi protected access. B. Wired privacy application. C. Wireless protocol for access. D. Wireless protection authentication. Choose now. Hey, don't follow the leader, guys. A. Wi-Fi protected access. You will want to know that for the test. WEP, Wired Equivalent Privacy. WPA is Wi-Fi protected access. So those are the two you'll want to know. Okay. Which two of these will protect you from users using flash drives getting viruses onto computers? A. Upgrade the network security to WPA. Yes or no? No. B. Prohibit the use of removable media on computers. Sorry? Absolutely. Yep, that's one way to fix it. See, configure the software firewall policy to prohibit the use of removable flash drives. Oh, good. Good job, guys. C, or sorry, D, set virus software to scan removable removable flash drives before they're accessed.
For the reporting, the answer on that one was no.
Yep. Yes, you do want to have it scanned. Alright, there you go. That is your quiz, guys. Good job.
Has your boost gone back on, Grace, or am I?
Oh, yes, it would. Because somebody called me on Skype, and I...
You want to turn off the automatic adjust after lecture, I'll remind you. Handy hint, everybody, turn the automatic adjust of your volume settings on Skype off so that it doesn't mess with your microphone boost.
Sorry, there, that should
no,
be
no,
better.
It does. Once you turn it off in 5.5 or better, Sean, it certainly
just
does
sits,
not
it
touch
stays.
It. It will not touch it anymore.
Finally. So.
I know. All right. I want to talk to you guys about two things. First, before that,
do I stay recording?
Questions? Yeah.
On here?
This is
yeah.
Okay. This is part of 9. All right.
Questions, comments, concerns?
Have we announced the Linux course? We'll do that after you've finished.
Yeah, Linux course next term. If anyone wants it, Carrie's writing it. Should be good. Server administration, probably not much GUI. It's probably going to be mainly command line. Is that correct?
Depends what people want, but yeah, pretty much. If you want to install your own GUIs and play with it, we can do modules on them.
Okay. So, what I'd like to talk to you about first is your new Academy connection. You're going to log in, and it's going to ask you to reset your profile and basically just check over your profile and reconfirm what newsletters you want from Cisco. It may also have you accept a new user agreement. If anyone has any issues with that, please let me know, and I can help you. But it's really simple and straightforward. You'll also see an action required. If this doesn't happen within 59 days, you will lose access to the Academy. Ian's on it. There's no action needed from you. Ian needs to do some agreements with Cisco. It's okay. There's no need to panic. Just continue. No worries. You'll see a new link on your page called the New Experience. Or at least I think you should. If you click on that, you're going to get Cisco's kind of a bit cleaner version of Facebook with forums and messages, and you can friend each other on Cisco. You can friend me on Cisco if you're that brave. I'll accept you.
That sounds pretty disgusting, actually. Not befriending you on Cisco, the whole fact that they're doing it.
Yeah, no,
it's not. The reason they're doing it, to be fair, guys, is that when you have lots of little academies like this one and the 3,000 others, they're islands in the stream, right? And they're all separated and you don't get to network with your other students. So it is actually a big step forward for most people to be able to get their hundreds of thousands of students to be able to communicate with each other. Otherwise, you all end up solving the same problems, fixing the same things, redoing all the same work, and you don't have a network of, like, you think of a school up in Port Hedland, which is sort of up on the northwest coast of Western Australia, that's pretty isolated. This social networking is a big thing for them.
Mm-hmm. I am your Academy Success
Lead.
Or in parks. Which all that means is that now they're actually going to monitor those little feedback things that you have to fill out at the end of the year. If you need help filling this out, if you have any issues, contact me and I will help you do it. It works with JAWS. Your guys aren't quite there yet, but it has little flash buttons above, and then underneath it, it has radio buttons. If you need help in any way, we have to fill those out. We can't just hit submit because it will be bad marks on our Academy, unless that's what you want to do. We need to help you fill that out, or at least show you how to fill it out properly now. Last of the time, we just didn't really care, and we just said submit, and it doesn't matter. But now we have to actually
do it. Yeah, because they never looked at it, but now they do.
Yeah, okay. Now they're...
They did look at it. They did look at it, but they didn't look at it as seriously as they are now. And they are becoming a lot more seriously about their benchmark process.
Yeah, it's so serious that if you don't fill them out, Oh, sorry, it's up here. If you don't fill them out, or if people are unsatisfied with us, we can actually get into some serious trouble and actually get shut down. So, yeah, if you have trouble with that, please let me know so I can help you. Also, I want to talk to you guys about your final, which will be coming up soon. Your final that counts is your final for 1 to 10. We haven't done Module 10 yet, but there may be some people who are interested in taking the practice finals or maybe even a final. I'm going to have one of you actually take the final first. It will be on a Tuesday night, your time, whoever this volunteer is, and we'll have a sighted person in. We'll have to install VMware or
VNC
on your computer, and we just are doing this because in the past Cisco has changed the finals without telling us, and if there are diagram descriptions that have changed, we will have someone there to help you.
Grace, we don't need to install VNC. We can just use Tandem with
JAWS
the
tandem
screen
video.
With the video.
If they have a full version of JAWS.
But if they've got to install VNC, it'll require a port forward.
Well, it's going to be somebody who's confident with that stuff. So if you are really confident and you are not too worried about the diagram descriptions maybe not being right, and do want the benefit of someone around to actually describe those diagrams to you, you can volunteer for that assignment. I already have someone in mind for it. So if you don't volunteer, someone will be recruited. So, yeah. If you want that, if you want to do that, email me or speak up now, and we'll get that working. All right.
So the final can be taken. The final can be taken anytime after Chapter 10?
Yes, that's right. The final is only for Chapters 1 through 10. You could take your final now, but the deal with the final is that I've got to find somebody who is willing to be the first final taker of the year and actually go through and
have... You could just enroll me and I could do it.
No, I can't. You have blown your two final takes. You only get to take it twice. So if I get a student to do it, then...
Hang on, isn't that a new course version?
Oh yeah, I would have too.
No, I enrolled you last term. So that's why I have to have a student. Okay, who are you? Hold on.
Okay
then.
Okay, well, you guys can sort that out. Have you got a recent JAWS with Tandem on it? Because a port forward for VNC might be a problem.
Yeah, you'll want a version of JAWS that is...
It worked.
Oh. Does 10 do it?
Yes, 10 does it. Is your 10 authorized in some way? Fantastic. Yep, you will be just fine. We'll get that all sorted out, and I'll just be on Skype with you when you do it. Yep, no worries. All right, the final. When you're ready to take the final after Lynn has done it, and we'll get you ready to do that after Module 10, probably the week after the roleplay, or the week before the roleplay, probably that Wednesday before the roleplay, we'll have you do your final after we finished Module 10. You guys will be ready to take your final. I'll put up the practice exam after Module 10, so you guys can take a crack at that. That is a free mock final. It is not graded. It has zero effect on your grade. So you can go and you can fail it and it doesn't matter. It will help you study for the final and it will get your pre-final jitters out of the way because it really isn't that big of a deal. It's a 50-question, multiple-choice thing. And it'll be up for a week after we do Module 10. For your final...
In the past, it's been harder than the actual final, just so you guys know.
Final is something else. The final is going to ask you questions that really make you think. If it's the same final that was on last year. I looked at it, and I did really well, but I was looking at these questions, and I'm like, wow, that is a really good question. I've never quite thought about that before. So it's not so... there's a little bit of memorizing ports, memorizing acronyms, but a lot of it is really just thinking like a technician type of questions.
Applying the stuff you've learned.
Yeah, it's a really different sort of final than...
Now, do we tell them that you have to have the final active for an 8-hour window?
Yeah, I was going to tell them about that.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't done. Alright, the rules for the final. Give me at least 48 hours notice, because I have to activate it. You get an 8-hour window, and you have to set up a time with me to actually be on Skype or Ventrilo with you to take your final.
Or I can do it if I really need to.
Yeah.
I've done it before, but
if
it's
you want
usually
daytime,
better if Grace does.
You'll have to do it in the afternoon with Sean. That's fine. I probably won't do many finals, depending on how quick a test taker you are, after 8 or 9 at night, my time. So if you want to do it in the afternoon times, you'd have Sean. If you want to do it in the early morning or evening times, you'll have me. What'll happen is you get on Ventrilo or Skype with me, and I'm there, and it's really for you guys, in case you have a question or something you don't understand. In case your final gets stuck and your computer crashes, so I can open it back up for you. In case there's an issue with the, basically any questions or anything.
Maybe
also,
the wording of the questions a bit.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense to you. We can help you with that. It's basically for you guys. We are supposed to, quote, monitor you, and that's about the best we can do also. So we'll be there to make sure that everything goes smoothly for you with the final. You'll be emailed diagram descriptions the day before the exam, and they should be absolutely correct, because we're going to have Lynn go ahead and go through the test before everybody else does, so that nobody else will have any issues with diagram descriptions. That's basically the final. Any questions on the final?
How much is the final worth in the grade book? I'm trying to remember.
20% of your grade.
Whoa.
That's probably
good
to know.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
This course is a course based on, a lot of it is based on test taking. Your final used to be worth 35% of your grade, but we decided that 15% wasn't enough for lab marks, so we made it worth less. We're training for the A+ course, or some of us are. So the taking one test is going to be worth quite a lot. And it's the, It's basically a certification test. It isn't worth tons and tons and tons, but it's worth quite a bit. So you guys can understand what that is going to be like when you go into your testing centers and get the A+. Don't panic. If you fail, we can go over it with you, and you can take it again. You only get 2 shots at the final, though. And if there's a real problem and something really messes up, we can go in and possibly get you another shot, but that is in some very dire circumstances.
We've done it before. It can happen. Anyone got any questions on the final? It depends. I mean, Grace is starting a telemarketing job, so basically you ping us somehow and we'll work something out with you. Either Grace or Sean, or worst case scenario, I can supervise finals if nobody else is around, but yeah.
My mornings are going to be free. So you'll have Monday and Tuesday morning. You'll have evenings after, I don't know, depending on the evening. We'll work it out. Don't worry about it. Monday and Tuesday mornings, though, you'll probably be able to catch me about 9 o'clock Eastern time. I should be able to help you with a final. Wednesdays and Thursdays in the evening time, about 7 or 8 o'clock, you'll be able to catch me.
Man, I just checked with her. I couldn't remember
Saturdays,
all of this.
Saturdays, possibly. Sundays, possibly.
Yeah, just check with her.
Yeah,
just check with her, because nobody remembers that. I've forgotten already. What was that, Monday and Tuesday after morning? And
in
was
the mornings.
That Thursday, whatever?
Yeah. I'm starting a new telemarketing job, so my days are going to be really, really busy.
Yeah, she's too late our time doing telemarketing, and we'll see how that goes. And
That's interesting because when I was at the CCB convention, there was a place in California that was offering services like remote teaching over the internet of JAWS and everything. And I've just always liked working on computers. And I told the guy, you know, because I was interested in all the stuff he does, and he said that I seemed like a perfect match, and he's actually going to hire me to do remote teaching of JAWS and stuff over the internet.
Oh, good for you!
But it's you know.
Let's finish the plan stuff though. Am I hitting stop here?
Oh,
or are we
I'm sorry.
Social.
No,
that's okay.
We'll talk about your job in a minute. That's really exciting. But
Oh no, I didn't want to interrupt. But I thought
no, that's fine. You can't
talk about that's the great. We'll talk about it in a minute. Okay, any other questions on... No worries. Any questions on the finals? Anything else you guys want to know? It's not that big a deal. It's 50 questions and a couple more for field to make sure you're not cheating.
And you get 3 hours, okay?
Yeah, you have three hours to do this final.
You have plenty of time.
I recommend getting yourself a beverage of your choice and settling yourself down to do the final and getting everything sorted, and if you need food, have it there near you and stuff, and then get everything all set and then sit down and do the final. That way you're all
set. So do you guys do like Skype?
Yep,
you guys do Skype in the final?
Or Ventrilo. Or Teams.
And do you do tandem?
We can.
No. We don't have to. We don't have to watch you answer the questions, because that usually we want to do other things. We don't really want to like watch you do the final. You can do tandem.
I've thought about starting to do tandem, but I only think I'd do that if there was a reason to believe that you were
that someone might be cheating or something.
Up.
Or you request it. I mean, obviously, yeah. I know personally I would feel funny if somebody was tandemed into my computer while I was finaling. I'd be just...
I wouldn't.
I don't feel funny, you know, being... If the instructor is there, I just always ask, you know, because I've had, you know...
If you have a documented medical memory problem and you feel that you need access to notes for your final, you need to let me know before you start that final, because there's a box I can check. And it has to be a documented medical, I have a brain injury problem. If you need that exemption, you need to get in contact with me, and I need to figure out some way of verifying it so that you can take your final and have access to learning materials.
Yeah, you're not to use your notes in the final. You are not to Google stuff up in the final. We really don't think that's a good idea.
You are not to phone a friend on a final.
On the final. You can ask us for help.
Oh, darn, I was going to ask the audience. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can ask us for help. We'll try and clarify things for you.
Or maybe a 50-50. Oh, no, 50-50s are always torturing.
To 25?
No, it's random.
Is that one of the
questions? Well, they're random anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
They're random anyway. We won't know. Just like
I'd have
quizzes.
To read it to you.
Are any other questions on the final and stuff? Everybody clear
cheating
with what we've said about the final?
Man.
Don't worry. Don't stress out too much. This is not a test that needs to stress you out. And it's basically to learn how not to be stressed out on a test that does actually mean quite a bit. So it's good practice at not being stressed out.
We do like an ITE meditation thing where it'll be like, now, picture you are sitting near a bubbling stream. Of course, you do not have your laptop here because water is bad for laptops.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Any other questions?
I think it's a gag, Kirish.
You...
Do one.
Yeah. If you have any... Oh, that would be so funny. If you have any questions that you want to ask privately about the final, find me, Skype me, email me.
Let one of us know.
Either way. Yep. And we'll take care of it. No stress. No worries. Don't worry too much about this, guys.